Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli, your Money, Riches, and Wealth, and I am on an open show with one of my favorite co-hosts tonight, and that's Maddie Bennett. Maddie, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. If I got any better, I'd be you tonight there, Maddie, you know? Anyway, we're on an open show tonight, so if you wanted to want to call in and direct the conversation, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in, direct the conversation and say, you know, this is a topic that if you could help me with, it would really help me tremendously. And as we always like to say, there's probably 20 or 30 or other people out there listening saying, ah, that's a question I'd like to hear the answer to, too. But I'm not going to call in and ask a question. It's just not my nature to do that. But if you're that kind of bold person, feel free to call in 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680 is the way to call in and ask your question and direct the conversation tonight. In the interim, Maddie and I will just ramble on about some good topics that might be of interest to you. So, Maddie, what's going on out there in the world of personal finances?
Yeah, so as the year's ending and the new year is about to be here, I know we always advise our clients to review their insurance policies at this time just to see what they have. What are some things they should be looking for, or what specific type of insurance policies would you want them to look at?
Well, we look at them all. Auto, home, umbrella, life, disability, long-term care, et cetera, et cetera. But you know the one that's most fascinating to me right now, Maddie, is because we've had a couple newer clients come in with some fascinating, well, actually one older client, one new client came in. So the older client, he has a father who's been paying since he's like 70-some years old, something like $14,000 a year in premiums, and he's now 100, okay? And the policy contract literally said that if you live to be 100, the policy lapses and you get nothing, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the client didn't realize this. And the client is in, has dementia now, so, you know, he's not even really participating. But the children just kept paying the premium because they felt it was logical. Sooner or later, this is a permanent policy that'll pay off $300,000. Well, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. These policies are contracts, and you need to know what the contract says. And in this situation, said if he got to be 100 years of age, he didn't get anything. And this is a problem that you know, that goes on in this industry, is agents come in, sell a policy to somebody, make them feel that it's X, Y, and Z. Now, it's not that the agent's an evil person. They're just selling things. You know, you need to understand what you're buying, and you need somebody without an economic bias to help you look at this and understand that. What do we do when we get clients come in? What do we always ask for? We ask them to go back and get a what?
In-service illustration, so we can look deeper.
We want to always see. We want to see, okay, get the company to give us an in-service illustration so that we can see what your projections are. And those in-service illustrations, you have to be careful of them because they can be extremely complicated, and you have to know, why are they saying X, and what does this word mean, and what does that word mean? And how should I interpret this, you know, because mm-hmm. you've got guaranteeds and you got non-guaranteeds and you got this rate and you got that rate and so forth. And, you know, the agent will point out this and that and make you feel like everything's going great. But you have to come in with an educated knowledge about this and say, well, wait a minute, we're not going to assume that this column is right, but we're also not going to assume that column's right. This is the column we're going to focus on. And this is why we're going to focus on it. And now we want to see how this policy is going to perform. Mm-hmm. You know, but we had another one, Maddie, where a client comes in He had been paying on a policy for about 5 years. Agent comes in about 2 years ago and says, so all that policy you got is garbage. Take the money out of that and buy this. This is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And, you know, we're analyzing this policy for this client now 2 years later. And, I mean, it's just unbelievable what they took the money out of and put it into. Not that the thing before was anything great, but what they put it into was even more ridiculous and made the client feel like it was a great thing. And that's why, you know, I wholeheartedly believe that you need an independent neutral party looking at this and educating you, saying, okay, this is what this one's saying, this is what that one's saying, this is what I think is the best thing for you. And, you know, also the other thing is there's emerging a market of commission-free products. And when you strip the agent's commission out of these products, they can be pretty attractive vehicles. So, you know, we've been seeing that a lot, especially in annuities, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, where you strip those commissions out. Somebody puts $100,000 in an annuity and you realize the commission can be easily $10,000.
Right.
And you think about that. You put in $100,000, they took $10,000 of your money and sent it off to the agent, and you're thinking you got a great deal? How does that work?
Right.
How do you get your head around that and say, wow, this is a great deal, you know?
Right. You're losing money automatically. It's going to take you years to gain that back.
Well, you know, the company will say, no. If you hold this for 10 years, you're not going to ever pay that commission to that agent. We're going to pay it to the agent. Well, duh. You know, you got my money for 10 years. You obviously made more than $10,000 off of me to pay that agent a commission. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's, yeah. You know, so I'm going to pay that commission no matter how you slice it or dice it. And this is why, you know, you need independent, objective people looking at this stuff. It, you know, I've got a saying, Maddie, that it's not the people in the industry. It's not the brokers and the insurance agents who are mean, evil salespeople, et cetera, et cetera. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is the culture is wrong in the brokerage firms, is wrong in the insurance companies, is wrong in the banks. The culture is wrong. It's about making money off of their clients and their customers. It's not about working for people in their best interest like a doctor would in a doctor's office. And that's why we believe independence, fee-only fiduciaries is extremely important. Anyway, Maddie, we're on an open show. We're through the first quarter of the show. Is there anybody online yet?
Or no, there is not, unfortunately.
We're not doing very well at encouraging people to call 410-922-6680 if you want to call in. We're going to a pause, and hopefully you'll be on the line when we come back with Money, Riches, and Wealth. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
I'm not much of music, but I think I could play that song. Anyway. We're on an open show tonight, Maddie. What do we have going down tonight?
Yeah, we've got one caller on the line, but I do just want to encourage everybody to please call since we are in an open show. 410-922-6680. That's 410-922-6680. Please give us a call to talk to Drew and I tonight.
All right, let's talk to Glenn. Let's see what he has questions all about.
Hi, Glenn.
Hey, guys. My wife and I got a Annual AGI, about 100,000. Next year, I'll be 72. I got to start taking RMDs. I do intend to donate around 20,000 a year to charities, and my RMD is going to be about 50K a year. Okay? And so I would have, till now, I've been planning on doing some QCDs to, you know, minimize the tax and get the charitable thing accomplished. Now, last week, I remember you mentioned something about the donor advised fund, and I'm receptive to that idea. I'm not sure which way to go or if you have any.
The donor advised fund doesn't work for you.
Okay.
The QCD is always going to be the better way to go for a 70, anybody over 70 and a half. The QCD is going to be the better way to go. But let me ask you a quick question, Glenn. Is there any chance that you're still working?
I'm not, but my wife is.
You are not, but your wife is. You know, that's
right.
That's if your television's still working, that's called the perfect retirement.
Yeah, you got that right. I worked a long time, you know, saved up enough to have a, you know, a RMD of over 50K. So
right, but the point is that the RMD is your RMD, and you are no longer working. Correct.
That's right. Yes. That's
and
right.
How old is your spouse?
She's 2 years younger than me, so she'd be like 70 this year coming up.
And how long does she continue? You think she'll continue to work?
Well, probably maybe only a year or two. She likes it, but she's, you know, a year or two. Not like 5 or 10 years, you know. No.
Okay. Well, the only point that I wanted to make is that if she was going to work beyond age 72, she should take all of her IRAs and roll them into her company 401k plan. And she would have no required minimum distributions if all of them are held inside the company's plan that she's working for. So that's a very important thing that all of our listeners should always remember. And not many financial advisors are going to tell you that because they don't want to lose the asset. I mean, who's going to tell Glenn with $1 million of assets with him, hey, Glenn, you're still working. Let's take our $1 million we're making money off of and put it into your company 401k that I won't make any commissions or fees off of anymore. So all of our listeners should keep that in mind.
Now, once she would leave work, she can still leave it there. Is that right?
Yeah, but she would have to take RMDs the minute she stops working. So let's say I'm 72 and a half, and I've rolled all my IRAs and everything into my company plan, and then I say, okay, I'm going to leave in July of the year I turned 72. They're going to make me take the RMD. But if I stay the whole year that I'm 72, no RMD that year, the whole year that I turned 73, no, and then I retired at 74, now I've got an RMD in 74. So that's the way that works. But anyway, back to your situation, RMD 50,000. Now keep in mind, it must be from an IRA, right?
Yeah, I converted everything over. So
good. You in other words, you did a direct rollover to a traditional IRA, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So as long as it's in an IRA, because that's a big mistake that people have made, believe it or not. They think you can do a QCD from a 401k or a 403b or something like that. You can only do a QCD from an IRA, a traditional IRA. Very important. Got to get it into the IRA. But the QCD is always going to beat the donor advised fund. In most situations, there's very, very few situations where I would probably look at going the donor advised fund. And that's if I have a very highly appreciated asset that I'm ready to sell and pay capital gains tax on. I might be, you know, because you understand why that's so powerful. Because it's a double benefit, right? Because I've got a stock I paid 10 for. It's now worth 100. And I want to do a lot of charitable giving anyway. So I take that stock worth $100,000 that I was ready to pay taxes on, and I put it into a donor advised fund. Now I get a full $100,000 tax deduction, but don't have to pay taxes on the $90,000 of gain that I was ready to realize.
Right, and I have some like that. I definitely have some that have, you know, 400% gains on them.
But are you planning to sell them?
Well, not immediately. I wasn't planning on it.
Well, then if you're not planning to, then the QCD is your way to go. There ain't no doubt about it.
And then the other part of this, though, is I wanted to do a lot of Roth conversion. I have very little in Roth, and I've been listening to you, and I know that that's been a mistake probably. I should be converting a lot of this over. I have not, but I still could do it. So with that,
the QCD just makes the Roth conversion an even better, you know, the option, because if you do the QCD, it can be a big opportunity. But if you did a big lump sum, highly appreciated stock into a donor advised fund, that also could be. But this is where tax planning comes in. This is where you need somebody to load all your tax information in and say, okay, if we go this way, if we go that way. But, you know, I don't like to do donor advised funds unless I have assets that I'm planning to sell. If I have the IRA distributions I've got to pay taxes on, I'd rather take it from the QCD rather than the donor advised fund, unless I'm going to sell them. If I know I'm going to sell them and realize $100,000 capital gain, I'm going to seriously be considering the donor advised fund.
Okay. Regardless of whether I want to do the Roth conversions, that was the other piece of this that I like your thought about.
Yeah.
You know, balance, taking off, you know, one balance is off against the other, and you don't pay tax on the RMD.
Yeah, but you know what you're talking about is, okay, so let's say I take $100,000.
The Roth conversion, I mean, sorry.
Right.
Don't pay tax.
So let's say I take $100,000 appreciated stock that I paid $20,000 for. It's now worth $100,000, okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that $100,000, I'm going to plop it into the donor advised fund, and then I'm going to do a $100,000 Roth conversion, okay? But if you think about it, I still have to take out the $50,000 from the RMD, right?
Yep.
So I'm going to still pay taxes on that. If I would have done the QCD, you know, I might have, you know, I'd have only $30,000 I have to pay taxes on. And see, this is where the three-dimensional chess game comes in. And you have to figure out, okay, with Glenn, what are the circumstances? Which one's going to work to his benefit and so forth? But keep in mind, highly appreciated assets, if I hold them until the day I die, currently the law says my children get them 100% tax-free, or my spouse gets them 100% tax-free, or at the very minimum, 50% tax-free. So
yeah.
This is why it's difficult to recommend the donor advised over the QCD, because that's taxable income, period. There's no way getting around it without a qualified charitable distribution.
That's the only way, huh?
Okay. Only way I know of.
Okay. Something about converting it to some kind of mutual fund or something like, what do they call it?
You're talking about the longevity fund.
Maybe that's it.
The longevity fund is, in my opinion, is a joke. You know, they came out with that stupid concept about 8-9 years ago. They don't give you a lot of options for it, and I've never used it. I've looked at it many times, especially when they first brought it out, but it's absolutely a worthless product. I'd, you know, love for them to revamp that law, and maybe that would be beneficial. So, you know, anyway, QCD right now is still the way I'm going to favor, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. Take
care.
Thank you so much. Good talking to you. Well, we've got another caller online. I don't know how much time we have. What does Chris say? What does he want to do?
We've got about 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Let's hear Joe's question, and then we'll come back to him and answer it after the break. So bring him on. We'll hear his question. Joe?
Is it true that you never have to pay taxes on a Roth IRA?
At this point in time, there are no tax ramifications on any money in a Roth IRA.
Okay, I have two other questions. One about Bitcoin, and something that somebody said on TV that I think you're going to take exception to, but I'm not sure.
All right, well, Lena, you hold on with those two questions, if you will, okay? We got to take this pause. You're going to hold with me?
Sure.
Okay, looking forward to it. We're going to talk to Joe when we come back. Anybody else wants to get online, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And we're going to be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Ah, now look, now look, Chris is trying to gain favor with the host of the show, starting to play Christmas music, you know?
Uh-huh.
And
I
not
like
just
it.
Christmas music, but good Christmas music, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yes.
So anyway, he knows my favorites, though, so hopefully between now and Christmas, they will be played. Anyway, let's go to Joe. Let's get rocking and rolling. We got some other callers on the line now, too. So.
Yes. All right. Joe.
All right. Am I on?
Yep. Go ahead.
All right. I'm having trouble remembering the things I want to talk to you about, so I'm going to mention it all at once, and then you can choose how you want to answer them.
Okay.
One is the Bitcoin thing. The other, a guy talked about how it's oxygen to the economy. That's one. And then the other was, if you sell your house in Maryland, I live in Lutherville, what are the tax ramifications on it? We almost have it paid off. And
so wait a minute. What's that question mean? You sell your house in Maryland, your personal residence?
Yeah. What are the tax ramifications?
Well, will you make more than $500,000 on the sale of the house?
No, sir.
Are you married?
Yes, sir.
Then there's no tax ramifications on the sale of a personal residence for a married couple who make less than $500,000 gain on the sale of the house. So
wonderful.
That's,
so we don't have to pay any capital gains on it.
No, sir, not at all. And keep in mind, too, a stupid thing that happens with real estate agents is you're selling your personal residence in Maryland, but you've already bought a place and relocated to Florida. When you come up to settle your Maryland home, the settlement people say to you, "Oh, Joe, you owe 7% non-residence tax on the sale of your house." Well, that's because the agent doesn't do their job. The thing that the agent needs to do is tell you that this is your personal residence. When we get a contract, you need to put in an exemption for that non-residence tax because this is the sale of your personal residence. And if they would just do their job, people wouldn't experience this thing that seems like, you know, such a horrible thing. Not to mention that it's not a tax even, really. It's more of a withholding. In other words, Maryland just wants you to file your tax return if you needed to. And it's really designed for investors. It's not designed for the guy selling his personal residence and has no Maryland tax liability anyway. The crypto question, this is my opinion. People are going to make money in crypto. People are going to brag about the money they made in crypto. But I don't buy an asset that's worth nothing. There is nothing to Bitcoin. It is nothing. It is a psychological thing that people believe in and they're willing to pay for because they say there's a limited supply. And if it were true that there was a limited supply of crypto, I would probably be more interested in it, possibly. But there isn't a limited supply. There's a limited supply of Bitcoin, but every day somebody can create a new crypto coin, Litecoin, Dogecoin, Modella, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So how limited is it when you just can continue to create new ones and new ones and new ones and new ones? The thing you ought to listen to and keep your eyes out for are stable coins, because they're going to become a very, very important thing for the future. But right now, I've got to go, Joe. So I got a bunch of callers now calling in. So I got to run and talk to them. Let's go to Ken there. Thank you, Joe.
All right. Hi, Ken.
Hi. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Okay, I just had a quick question. You had talked about long-term care insurance.
Okay.
At the beginning of your program. And
yeah.
I had bought a policy a couple years ago, and then after a few months, I get this paper in the mail saying, who would be the designated person to make premiums if I became incapacitated?
Right.
So right away, I thought, this is a scam. Stopped it, and that was the end of it. I just don't trust it after that.
Well, I don't think that was a good decision, because there is a requirement to make sure that you have somebody that will watch out to make sure your policy stays paid up so you don't lose it if for some reason you don't make that decision, if you don't make that payment. So in other words, in my mother's policy, as she got older, I was designated as the alternate payee or whatever. And when she didn't make a payment, I was notified. And then I just went to her and said, hey, Mom, you didn't make this payment. We got to make it soon or else this policy is going to lapse. So that's what it's all about. It really wasn't a scam. But I don't know what kind of policy you had. I don't know what your premium was. So you might have been, it might have been wise for you to cancel the policy for all I know. But what company was it with? What general company was it with?
Well, I'm not going to give you that information because I don't want to put out there that, you know, they're good or bad or whatever.
Okay.
But I just, when I got that notice, to me, I thought, okay, let's say I had a stroke. You know, it should kick in to take care of me. Why should somebody be making premiums on it?
Well, it depends on how the policy is written. If the policy is written that premiums are paid no matter if you're getting benefits or not, and some of them are written like that, that if you don't keep making the premium payment, then the policy lapses and you lose your benefits. Now, my mother's policy, if she starts receiving benefits, the premium stops, you know, and so forth. But I think what they're really looking for, Ken, is they're looking for the person who just forgets and they're losing a bit of their ability to manage this stuff. And all of a sudden the policy's going to lapse after years and years of payment. That's what they're really looking for. So we got to go and we're going to go to Stuart here, Maddie. Thanks, Ken, for that call and good question. Stuart, are you there?
How you doing, John?
We're doing great, and you?
I'm doing well. Maybe one of your younger callers is here, 25, calling from Annapolis. Just had a quick question or two. First one being I know it depends on policies and companies and that sort of stuff, but pension, is too far in between that they are nowadays, or a 401k from a company. I'm a union worker for sheet metal, so I have a choice between the two.
You're a union member for sheet metal down in the Anne Arundel County area?
Yeah, Local 100.
Do you know my grandson, Guy Wagner?
I know the name. I have not met him personally.
Okay, well, he's in the same union, if I understand correctly. Okay. So what's your question? Which is better, a 401k or a pension?
Yeah, as of a young... 4 years into it now. I'm not vested with my pension. Currently, it'll be 5 years.
The way that it's designed, okay, the way that the retirement system of the United States was originally designed, Stuart, is it's a three-legged stool. It's a pension from your company, it's your Social Security check, and it's the assets you accumulate. That's the general gist of why Social Security came into existence, that they were assuming companies were giving people pensions. Social Security was going to provide a third. The pension was going to provide a third. And it was up to you to accumulate enough money then to pick up the last third. So you'd have liquid cash and monthly cash coming from two different sources and liquid cash to provide the rest of it. And so the answer to your question is both. Both are important to you if you want to fulfill the general, you know, theoretical concept of how retirement in the United States was created. Now, in most companies today, it's a two-legged stool, which isn't a very stable stool, which is Social Security and your 401k, and that's it. So in your situation, you have the perfect situation, the pension, 401k, and Social Security. So you need to be focused on both.
Okay.
All right, my friend. Good question. Very good question. And say hi to Guy when you see him down there, okay?
I appreciate it. Well, dude, I don't know if you got still one more time. It might lead down a rabbit hole. But your thoughts on NFTs?
Non-fungible tokens are going to be a great concept for the future. There's going to be 99% of them are going to be worthless, but if you're smart enough to find those 1% of non-fungible tokens, let me explain to the listeners what a non-fungible token is. It's basically a digital piece of artwork or a digital something. So it might be the Super Bowl win of the, you know, the 2022 Super Bowl winner. The digital archive copy, you know, you bought or something ridiculous like that. It could be anything. It could be artwork. It could be a recording of a song or something of that sort. And a lot of non-fungible tokens are going to be worthless. Or, you know, you got to be wise about what to buy and what price to pay for them and know that you're going to be able to resell them to somebody. But I think it's going to be an absolutely enormous market. It's going to open up a tremendous opportunities for artists and musicians and so forth to make money and cut out a bunch of the middlemen that are raping them with fees and expenses, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why only a few actually survive in the music industry or in the art industry. So I expect it to be a big thing, but I have to run right now. Jim, I hope you will stay on with us, and you know, maybe we'll come back. If we don't have any callers, Maddie, we'll talk more about non-fungible tokens because I think it's a fascinating industry.
I agree. All
right. We got to go.
Thanks, Stuart.
And we're going to be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, Chris, what is it you want from me? Because you're buttering me up here, you know. It's not a Christmas song, but it's definitely one on the top two of greatest songs ever. So anyway, we're here on an open show, Maddie, 410-922-6680. We've only got a little bit of time left, maybe 10, 12 minutes. If you want to call in, we've got Jim on the line. We're going to go to you in a second, Jim. But if you want to call in, 410-922-6680, we should be able to get at least one or two more after Jim. But let's go to Jim. Let's not make him hold on there anymore.
All right. Hi, Jim. Welcome.
Yeah, good evening. I have to agree with the comments about that song. It is a classic.
There you go.
Well chosen. I have a couple quick questions about long-term care riders and insurance policies.
Okay.
If you have a policy written in Maryland that has to follow, let's say, insurance guidelines or long-term care guidelines for Maryland, and then you move to, let's say, Florida or something, is there anything that has to be done with that policy to conform with having changed your primary residence or anything?
No, not at all. Okay. Policies, you know, the policy is still going to be regulated by the insurance commissioner of Maryland because that's where it was written. But now when you move to Florida, it's also going to, Florida insurance commissioner is still going to have some jurisdiction over it because you're a resident of the area. But 49 states of the country, pretty much, you know, the rules in each state are pretty much uniform amongst them. Only New York has a uniqueness to it. But still, even then, if you buy a New York policy, you can take it anywhere in the country. It's totally irrelevant. It's just that if the company were to do something that needed, let's say, a talking to, the New York commissioner would be the one that does it under the New York laws. Whereas if something happens to your Maryland policy, it would be the Maryland insurance commissioner under Maryland laws. And if you move to another state, their insurance commissioner may step in also because you're a resident of their state. But nothing changes in the policy, my friend. Okay. So you don't have to worry about that.
Okay. And then a couple other quick questions regarding, I think you sort of may have commented on this indirectly at very early in the show, that, you know, some of these charges are actually, you know, premiums for the person that's writing the policy or the, you know, the insurance agent. I've been reviewing some policies for some of the bigger names like Hancock and Mass Mutual, and I'm seeing like a monthly administrative charge of like $10, which is not a whole lot. But then I also caught a part of the fine print that said there's a premium charge of 18%. Is that a normal type of thing in these kind of policies that you would have a pretty hefty premium charge?
You're talking about a premium tax. Not a premium charge.
They called it a charge, so you're saying essentially it's a tax.
Well, it's only in some states. There are some states that actually tax insurance premiums, so you know, and so forth. But I'm not sure what that's referring to without actually seeing what you're reading and so forth. But yes, all these policies have built into them a whole bunch of fees and commissions that they're paying out to the agent on a regular basis. You know, normally in a long-term care policy, there's usually a pretty hefty annual payout to the agent, because the concept that the company's thinking is that the agent's going to be the one that's going to service this policy sometime in the future. And so they're paying them constantly yearly out of the premiums to be there and be available to service that policy when the time comes.
Okay.
You know, so that's the concept behind the commissions being paid out of the policy. But, you know, long-term care is one of them that is still very commission-oriented. There's no way really around the commissions on those policies. I've never seen a fee-only long-term care policy, let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, thank you for the answers.
All right, my friend.
Great,
good question.
Great show.
All right, you take care. Have a great Christmas, my friend. All right, where are we going there, Maddie?
Yeah, up next we have Earl. Hi, Earl.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I forget your name sometimes. What's your name, the host?
You mean Maddie or Drew?
No, Drew. I meant Drew. I meant Drew, right. Now that you've been on for a long time. Drew, you're talking about terms, like you didn't explain it like to regular people like me. I guess QSCD thing. What is that? I
mean, QCDs?
Yeah, I have no. Yeah, QC. We was talking about this guy who's making a lot of money. I mean, he said he called up, he saved him.
So let me ask you a question, Earl. This is pretty straightforward, okay?
Go ahead.
Do you give money to charity?
Yeah.
Are you over 70 and a half years of age?
Yes.
Okay, so here you go. And do you have an IRA out there that every year they make you take some money out of?
Yes, every year you have to. Yeah, you have to. Yeah, I set
yes.
it up. You have to.
Okay, yeah. Okay, here we go. You ready?
Go ahead.
So a QCD is not a QCD. A QCD.
Oh,
it's a QCD.
Okay, go ahead.
It's called a qualified charitable distribution from an IRA.
Okay?
And so what it is, and this is very important, that if you give any money to charity every year and you're also getting an IRA required minimum distribution, mm-hmm. you want to do a QCD. But you can only do it if you're over 70 and a half years of age. Okay. So let's say Earl is giving $3,000 a year to his church.
Right.
And he has an IRA that requires him to take out $15,000 a year.
Right. That would be good. That's a good wish.
Right. So what Earl's going to do is he's going to take his $3,000 from his $15,000 required minimum distribution. He's going to have him make a check right out to the church. And now Earl's only going to have to report $12,000 on his income tax return. The $3,000 that he gave to his church is a wash. It's not taxable and it's not tax deductible. But here's the key. Most people over 70 and a half no longer itemize their deductions.
Right.
So they're no longer getting that charitable deduction. So doing a QCD is absolutely critical But you know what? Most brokers and insurance agents don't want to help people do a QCD because it's too much administrative work for them, and they're not interested in adding the extra burden on their team to do that when it's in your best interest to do that.
Well, so, Drew, did you say, okay, you said a lot of information. I just would like to say one more time. You had to take out $15,000. You gave an example, right?
Right.
So, and you give $3,000 to charity. So that $3,000 is not taxable since you're giving it to charity. Oh, I see.
Right. Yeah. So now you only report $12,000 on your tax return instead of $15,000. So now let's take it the other way. Let's say that Earl just takes his full $15,000 out, right? And then he writes a check for $3,000 out to his charity. Now he doesn't get a tax deduction for that anymore, right?
No.
And he still reports $15,000. Well, when you do the QCD, you not only do you still get the exact same benefit on your tax return in the sense that you don't take the itemized deductions,
right?
But now you're only reporting $12,000 on your tax return, not $15,000.
Oh,
you can see the power.
Very good. Right, because I heard you say, so I thought maybe that's just for wealthy people or something, QCD.
No, it's for everyone. Anyone who has a required minimum distribution coming out of an IRA, and that's the key, it's got to be an IRA. Because if you leave your money in your 401k and they require you to take it out, you can't do a QCD. It's got to be in a traditional IRA. And you make
401. What is a 401?
The employer. If you have money still left at your employer plan.
Oh, I see.
So,
okay. Okay. That wouldn't be the federal government.
The thrift savings plan is a 401k.
But that doesn't mean the federal government. If you work for the federal government, right?
Yeah. If you work for the federal government, it would be called the thrift savings plan. And that would be a 401k. You got to take it out of the thrift savings plan and put it into an IRA in order to get the ability to do a QCD. I would take it out. If I were in the thrift savings plan, I'd take it out of there in a heartbeat. Those people are a pain in the neck to deal with.
Okay. Thank you, Drew. Okay, you taught me something. I'm glad you explained it to me. Thank you, Drew.
All right, you take care, Earl. You have a great Christmas, my friend.
Right, same to you. Thank you, Drew.
Take care. Bye. Well, we're almost over here, Maddie. We only have about a minute. You have anything that you... I shouldn't ask you this question, but maybe you... Go ahead. You have anything you want to say?
No, we kind of covered everything. I said this to you.
You own any non-fungible tokens?
I do not. I'm staying away from crypto. I learned from you.
Come on. The non-fungible token is not a crypto. It's owning something. You're owning something. You're owning a piece of digital art. You're owning a song. You're owning a first only. You know, and it's guaranteed to be that. There could be value in that, you know, if you pay the right amount of money for it, right?
Yes.
Well, anyway, we're almost out of time. He's going to start playing music that says we've got to go, Maddie. So next week, I'm going to be talking about Social Security. So anybody wants to listen, we're going to be dealing any of your Social Security questions. We're going to be answering them. Maddie, I appreciate you being with me.
Thank you. You're
a great co-host.
Thank you for having me. Have a good night, everyone.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. What I'd like to do to you, shower the people you love with love. Show them the way you feel. Things are gonna be much better.